when that guy went to like that that untouched island and the
Sentinel Island
lived on the island.
North Sentinel Island.
Yeah. The tribe fucking shot him with bows and arrows and killed him. Like, I killed
so
him. Fucking
good.
I'm like, bro, what are you doing? Leave those people the fuck alone, you goddamn idiot. They're not, like,
I'm an explorer.
I don't know what the fuck that is. They're
Ryan.
No, bro, what is this?
I'm an explorer.
If you looked at his account, you would see that for the missionaries, there's that one achievement that none of the other missionaries have, and that if he got that one achievement, he would be like the greatest missionary ever. If he got the uncontacted tribe chief mode that
yeah,
no one's gotten in like 200 years. Welcome back to the Trilateral Troika. This is Steve, along with the other Steve.
Hello.
And Ryan.
So I was doing some pre-reading.
How are you gonna drink Canada Dry? I mean,
I was that kid, so I'm like reading ahead. Did you guys know Louis Farrakhan is still alive?
Yeah, he's like 93, I think.
He's so fucking old, bro. I don't know how that dude is still alive, but yeah.
I was blown away by that. I imagine when he dies, I don't think there's as many holdings, but I think it's going to be like when the Reverend Moon died. There's going to be like crazy splinter groups that are going to break off and like...
Oh, the Reverend Sun Young Moon?
Yeah.
Is that what happened?
Yeah, like his sons are like fighting with each other, and like one of them has this church, it's like the Rod of Iron Church or something like that. And they all have like assault rifles, and like he wears this like crown and like these robes, and like does mass with like an assault rifle.
Is he the one that wears a crown of bullets?
I think so. Yeah.
it's the tackiest thing I've ever seen in my life. It's like golden bullets that are like I guess hot glued together into a crown.
Oh my god!
It's like the people that like they take their. It's like. The church of the AK, like the Kalashnikov service. Like, you just go in there with your gun every time. Like, you pray with it, you sleep with it. It's like Marines boot camp. You know
it's
what I'm saying? Like,
every
it stays
bit
by
bad
your side.
As a Jehovah's Witness or any of those people, they go their whole life believing this thing is imminently going to occur, and then they die with a bunch of guns. That's basically what it is.
Yeah.
It's fucking stupid. Oh, shit.
It's also hysterical though too at the same time.
Oh yeah, it's stupid and funny. Yeah, I think it's actually kind of sad too. Actually, like just to watch these people waste huge swaths of their lives over some fear that never comes to materialize. Fucking hilarious.
But it is another form of mental illness too.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it can get there. I think some of it's just delusion. You know, it is what it is. You're self-deluded.
Yeah.
You're not necessarily sick, but you're so deluded, like belief-wise, that you're never getting out the other side of it.
It's like you're not necessarily sick, but you're willing to entertain ridiculous thoughts, and the more you listen to those ridiculous thoughts,
yeah,
the more they kind of just get their claws into you.
It's so silly. We used to deal with that shit all the time when we were kids, and they would be like, "Aren't you worried about your soul and what happens?" No, I really don't fucking care. Goodbye.
Yeah, no.
Pascal's wager. I chose the opposite. Fuck off.
You know, when I was a kid, I feel like...
I'm eating a shamrock shake. I've already damned myself to hell.
That goddamn Listerine shake. People would be like, oh, aren't you scared of hell? It's like eternal torment. And I'm like, no, because like pain is a human thing. Like, if you die, you don't have nerves anymore, and that's where your pain comes from. So how's it going to hurt in hell? And my mom would just scream and yell at me.
I'm more scared of Steve right now because he hasn't said anything and he's probably rolling dice to determine what he's going to say next, you know?
He's sitting there taking notes.
He's rolling dice. He's behind his DM screen.
Just peeking up every now and then, looking, shaking my head.
Smirking out one side of your face, grinning on the other.
Looking at Ryan, looking back at behind the screen and then looking back at Ryan, I'm just like shaking my head.
Oh, man. You boys are unsaved. Unclean.
So, this is our second part of our two-part series on Malcolm X. We talked previously about his beginnings, how he got into the Nation of Islam, became one of its most, possibly its most prominent member, and then left the organization over disagreements with them over doctrine and also the continued misbehavior and bad actions and just outright crimes of Elijah Muhammad.
He is not celebrating Taco Tuesday. That is a crime. We are separating ourselves from these blasphemous people.
Episode 121, right? So if we do 242 episodes, can we refer to Malcolm as Malcolm in the Middle?
Yes.
Oh my god, yes.
Dad jokes.
Malcolm X in the Middle.
So, after leaving the Nation of Islam, Malcolm X would found an organization called Muslim Mosque, Inc. It was a religious organization, and also the organization...
I can't take that seriously.
I know, it just sounds terrible. It sounds like something. It sounds like a brand at Aldi's.
You know? Yeah, I was just... You know, people knock Aldi, but I just find that the Muslim Mosque, Inc. Chicken tenders are really much better than
They're so much better than the Tyson, you know?
Yeah.
They're halal and everything. It's perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. Takes 30 minutes for someone to check you out. It's great. I had to have an autistic child. We were just at Aldi's, and an autistic child taught me how to use the cart return, because I didn't know how. I had never paid for one. My wife always does, so I didn't know how it worked. I knew you put the thing in somehow to get the coin back. So I turn around because I don't know what I'm doing. So I'm about to call for my wife, and there's a guy behind me. I'm waiting. I'm like, you know how this thing works? And he's like, I have a quarter. And I was just like, oh, I'll show you. And then he comes over, and he's like, I mean, he was like full volume. I'm like, oh, man. Thank you, buddy. Enjoy the spectacle.
How old was he?
He had to be like in his like late teens, early 20s.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I was going to say if he's like 4 or 5, that might just be the kids right
now. Nah, then I would have been like
teens, 20.
I have a quarter. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, bro. Yeah. He's deep.
Tucker deep Carlson over here.
No, it was just Ron DeSantis behind me. I have a quarter. Probably stole it, you fuck.
Steve's over here like Tucker Carlson. Like, this is amazing. Now the homeless can't steal it because they don't have quarters.
Oh, I wasn't doing that. Nah, I'm not doing that. How dare you? This food is so cheap. It's so cheap. Meanwhile, the average Russian makes 1/10 the income that he spent at the store.
Bro, yeah, it was actually half their monthly income of the average Russian is what he spent at the store.
Bro, he was just glazing Putin the whole time he was over there.
Like, yeah, that, I think there's dirt involved. He's probably like, you know, somehow tangentially involved. Maybe he's involved in Trump's dirt. There's definitely dirt there. Like, let's not kid ourselves anymore.
Look how cheap this stuff is. Like, look what the price of the ruble is compared to the dollar. Fuck. Jesus Christ, bro.
Malcolm X also founded a secular organization that advocated Pan-Africanism called the Organization of Afro-American Unity.
Inc. It's in the produce aisle.
You know, because this is still like, they even had like Murder Incorporated back then, you know, it was just what you did.
Oh, God.
Murder Incorporated, hell yeah, dude. Albert Anastasia, yeah.
On March 26, 1964, he would briefly meet Martin Luther King Jr. For the first and only time. Really long enough for both of them to have their photos taken together in Washington, D.C., as they both attended the Senate's debate on the Civil Rights Bill at the U.S. Capitol building. In April of 1964... Malcolm X gave a speech titled The Ballot or the Bullet, in which he advised African Americans to exercise their right to vote wisely, but cautioned that if the government continued to prevent African Americans from attaining full equality, it might be necessary for them to take up arms.
Yep.
In the weeks after he left the Nation of Islam, several Sunni Muslims encouraged him to learn about their faith, and he soon converted to Sunni Islam.
Malcolm X did.
Yes.
So he's not very principled, I guess. Like, he'll flip script, like, real quick. All right? Like, the smallest bit of, like, pushback, like, he'll change his mind. Like, he'll change what he believes in.
No, he's not
that. Well, no, because remember, it's after he left the organization. Like, he seems to be, like, full on that, like, the Nation of Islam is not, you know, on the up and up, and their version of Islam is not the up and up. You know, it's like if someone said, like, that like their weird branch of like Christianity was the only true branch of Christianity, and that all others were like fake.
You had some Pentecostal come dancing in there with fucking two rattlesnakes in his hands and saying everybody else is fake.
Yeah.
Okay.
But in that same month, with financial help of his half-sister, Ella Little Collins, he flew to Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, as the start of the Hajj, the pilgrimage that Muslims are obligated to make to Mecca.
Mm-hmm.
He was originally delayed in Jeddah when his U.S. citizenship and inability to speak Arabic caused his status as a Muslim to be questioned.
So, wait a minute. So, he was from the United States and he couldn't speak Arabic, so they're like, nah, I don't think you're Muslim.
Yeah, they were like, this isn't really checking out, because there's probably not, you know, a lot of Muslims coming from America to Saudi Arabia to go on the Hajj.
He's like, my name's Malcolm X. What the fuck, you think that's a Christian name? Come on, man.
He also received Abdul Rahman Hassan Azam's book, The Eternal Message of Muhammad, with his visa approval, and he contacted the author. Azam's son arranged for his release and lent him his personal hotel suite. The next morning, he learned that Prince Faisal had designated him as a state guest.
Prince Faisal?
Yeah.
Faisal goes west.
Pfizer. Prince Pfizer.
Prince Pfizer.
Yes, the guy
that he's a hard man to deal with. Prince Pfizer. Very rigid man.
Several days later, after completing the Hajj...
Yeah, just stand at attention the whole time he was talking. You know, it's just very upright experience.
I have a new opinion for who should be the man of stone or man of marble, whatever the fuck it is. Not Robert E. Lee. Prince Pfizer.
Several days after completing the Hajj, Malcolm had an audience with the prince. He would later state that seeing Muslims of quote-unquote all colors, from blue-eyed blondes to black-skinned Africans, interacting as equals, led him to see Islam as a means by which racial problems could be overcome. He had previously visited the United Arab Republic, which was a short-lived nation that we talked about in our Gaddafi episode, between Egypt and Syria. He had visited Sudan, Nigeria, and Ghana in 1959 in order to make arrangements for a tour of Africa by Elijah Muhammad.
You said United Arab Republic, and I was very confused for a minute because my brain heard that as United Arab Emirates. So I was like, I don't think that's between Egypt and Syria. I mean, it might be, but like, I was just very confused for a second.
After his journey to Mecca in 1964, which was his second visit to Africa, he returned to the United States in late May and flew to Africa again in July.
How much did it cost to fly to Africa back then? He's flying a lot.
Man is so jet lagged right now. I'm jet lagged just listening to this.
During those visits, he met officials, gave interviews, and spoke on radio and television in Egypt, Ethiopia, Tanganyika, Nigeria, Ghana, Guinea, Sudan, Senegal, Liberia, Algeria, and Morocco. In Cairo, he attended the second meeting of the Organization of African Unity as a representative of the OAAU. By the end of his third visit, he had met with essentially all of Africa's prominent leaders, including Kwame Nkrumah of Ghana, Gamal Abdel Nasser of Egypt, Ahmed Ben Bella of Algeria, and they all invited...
Is that the OG Nasser?
Yeah, that's the Nasser we talked about.
Okay.
And they all invited Malcolm X to serve in their governments. After he spoke at the University of Ibadan, the Nigerian Muslim Students Association bestowed on him the honorary Yoruba name of Omowale, which means the son who comes home.
Wow.
He later called this his most treasured honor.
So why didn't he change his name to Malcolm Omowale?
Because I guess it's more of like an honorary name. Because remember, he changed
X
his name too.
Is not exactly on his birth certificate, is what I'm saying.
Well, X is what people are commonly calling him. He had a much longer name with Shabazz at the end, like a very like sort of like Arabic name where there's like it's actually like five names.
Yeah, when you got that Shabazz, that's how you know.
Guaranteed.
Yeah. That man's serious.
Malcolm, though, hated Moise Tshombe, the leader of Congo, who he referred to as a Uncle Tom figure. In a 1964 speech in New York, he called Tshombe the worst African ever born, and the man who in cold blood committed an international crime, murdered Patrice Lumumba.
I thought his name sounded familiar to Tshombe. Yes. Okay.
Patrice.
Tshombe's decision as well in 1964 to hire white mercenaries to put down the Simba Rebellion greatly offended Malcolm, who accused the mercenaries of committing war crimes against the Congolese.
Which they did.
Yes. On November 23rd, 1964, on his way home from Africa, he stopped in Paris, where he spoke at the Salle de la Mutualité. After his return to the United States, he accused the United States of imperialism in the Congo by supporting Tshombe and his quote-unquote hired killers, as he called the mercenaries. He accused Tshombe and the American president, LBJ, of quote-unquote sleeping together. When I say sleeping together, I don't mean that literally, but beyond that, they're in the same bed. Johnson is paying the salaries, paying the government, propping up Tshombe's government, this murderer.
Wow.
Why do they gotta be in bed for Johnson to pay the salaries?
Tell me how you feel.
He also expressed anger about Operation Dragon Rouge, where the United States Air Force dropped in Belgian paratroopers into the city of Stanleyville, modern-day Kisangani, to rescue the white Belgian hostages from the Simbas.
Ikwensuocha. White devil. What's Natsu Kao mean? It means white warrior.
Malcolm maintained that there was a double standard when it came to white and black lives, noting that it was an international emergency when the lives of whites were in danger, making Dragon Rouge necessary, but that nothing was done to stop the abuses of the Congolese at the hands of Tshombe's hired killers. He charged further that the Congolese have been massacred by white people for years and years, and that the chickens have come home to roost.
I gotta say, he's not wrong. Like, we've seen time and time again, just in history, when it is a minority child or African-American child that's, you know, let's just say missing, they don't get the kind of news coverage that, you know, a white, blonde-haired, blue-eyed child gets when they go missing.
Fuck no.
It's so fucking weird, and I don't understand it.
Well, it's like if a black man defends himself with a gun, you don't see the fucking NRA out on the street. Like, he's just exercising his right.
Yeah, what's his name that got shot when he told the cop, I have a gun in my center console, it's registered to me, and then the cop just pulls out a gun and smokes him. I'm like,
hey. Like, hey, that man was hopped up on weed. You didn't know what he would do.
Yeah, who knows what a weed person smoker would do.
These reefers, you know, they go crazy on the weed.
Reefer madness causes reefer badness, you know.
I'm just never not surprised by the double standards that we have here, but
yeah.
On November 30th, Malcolm X flew to the United Kingdom, and on December 3rd, he took part in a debate at the Oxford Union Society. The motion was taken from a statement made earlier that year by then-U.S. presidential candidate Barry Goldwater. Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice. Moderation in the pursuit of justice is no virtue. Malcolm would argue for the affirmative, and interest in the debate was so high that it was televised nationally by the BBC.
Mm-hmm.
In his address, Malcolm rejected the label of black Muslim and said focused on being a Muslim who happened to be black, which reflected his conversion to Sunni Islam. He only mentioned his religion twice during the speech, which was part of his effort to defuse his image as a quote-unquote angry black Muslim extremist, which he had long hated. During the debate at Oxford, he criticized the way Anglo-American press portrayed the Congo crisis, noting the Simbas were portrayed as primitive, cannibalistic savages who engaged in every form of depravity imaginable, while Tshombe and the white mercenaries were portrayed in a very favorable light and almost no mention of any atrocities on their part. He also charged that the Cuban emigre pilots hired by the CIA to serve as Tshombe's air force indiscriminately bombed Congolese villages and towns, killing women and children, but this was almost never mentioned in the media, while the newspapers featured long accounts of the Simbas raping white women and molesting nuns. Likewise, he felt the term mercenary was inappropriate and preferring the term hired killer, and that Tshombe should not be described as a premier, as he preferred to be, referred to as a cold-blooded murderer. He also stated that he regarded as the extremism of the Tshombe government was, quote-unquote, never referred to as extremism because it was endorsed by the West. It is financed by America, it's made respectable by America, and that kind of extremism is never labeled as extremism.
God, listen, Malcolm X, old Malcolm's coming hard. He's coming like Cat Williams did with that interview with Shannon Sharp right now. He's just going in on everybody right now.
The Malcolm X Shay Shay interview.
Love Shay Shay with Malcolm X. Now tell me what you think, Malcolm. Shannon's just fucking Arnold Schwarzenegger big and just got that lisp. It's so funny. I love Shannon Sharp.
I love him so much.
I don't like Sterling Sharp. He always comes off like a douchebag.
Yeah. Malcolm argued this extremism was not morally acceptable since it's not extremism in defense of liberty. Many in the audience at Oxford were angered by his thesis and his support for the Simbas who had committed atrocities, with one asking, what sort of extremism would you consider the killing of missionaries? In response, he answered, it is an act of war. I'd call it the same kind of extremism that happened when England dropped bombs on German cities and Germans dropped bombs on English cities.
He's not wrong there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, especially, like, a missionary, right? Like, if they're legitimately a missionary and not doing any other kind of, like, deceitful or underhanded nonsense, I'm not a huge fan of what they're doing, but also...
You could argue it's spiritual colonialism.
Yeah,
It does go hand in hand with colonialism. It's not like, you know, the missionaries showed up and weren't in any way involved in the colonial project.
I don't know. I just know a bunch of people who have done, like, mission trips to South America who are not interested in, like, the colonialism aspect as much as they are, like, brainwashing people and getting to join their silly religion aspect.
Yeah, but I mean, that's...
go for good...
That's, like, not being interested in civil rights, but still, like, signing documents and mortgages that say that no black people live in your neighborhood.
I mean, at that point, you're abjectly against civil rights.
But you're not, like, going, you know, just because you say you're not part of that system... You still did the mission, which is still technically part of the whole persistent problem.
Oh, God damn it. I'm getting milkshake dumped again because I think missionaries are okay. Motherfucker.
I don't think missionaries are okay. I don't think you think that. I think some people who went on mission are fine. I know a ton of people went on mission. They're normal people. And some of them are close friends. But at the same time, I think if you push me in a corner and said, Steve, what's your opinion on it? I would absolutely be like, they're fucking colonialism.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I absolutely giggled like an idiot when that guy went to, like, that that untouched island and the...
Sentinel Island?
...lived on the island.
North Sentinel Island?
Him. Yeah, the tribe fucking shot him with bows and arrows and killed him. Like, I giggled so like a fucking good. Idiot. I'm like, bro, what are you doing? Leave those people the fuck alone, you goddamn idiot. They're not, like,
I'm an explorer.
They're not gonna know what the fuck that is. They're
Ryan.
Like, no, bro, what is this?
I'm an explorer.
If you looked at his account, you would see that... For the missionaries, there's that one achievement that none of the other missionaries have, and that if he got that one achievement, he would be like the greatest missionary ever. If he got the the uncontacted tribe chief mo that no one's gotten in like 200 years.
Pop up.
He said the uncontacted tribe chief mo.
he was trying to platinum the missionary status.
No one's platinumed in 200 years, and he wants to be the guy that does it.
Oh, man.
My whole thing is that, like, people like him, you're a clown. Like, you're a fucking clown. But if you're, like, one of these people who's just like, hey, I'm, like, just got out of high school, and I'm gonna go build a bridge with my church in some fucking South American country.
Darfur.
Like, all right. at least you're going for the right reasons. As long as you're not trying to actively, you know,
proselytize?
No. Yeah, like, yeah, that
they
also,
are.
Like, absolutely, more like
they don't get those bridges for
doing
free.
Harm, you know what I'm saying? Like, not actively harming these people when you're doing it.
Yeah.
On February...
Sorry.
On February 5th, 1965, Malcolm flew to the United Kingdom again, and on February 8th, he addressed the first meeting of the Council of African Organizations in London. The next day, he tried to return to France, but was refused entry. On February 12th, he visited Smethwick near Birmingham, where the Conservative Party had won the parliamentary seat in the 1964 general election. The town had become a byword for racial division after the successful candidate, Peter Griffiths, was accused of... was accused of using the slogan, "If you want an N-word for a neighbor, vote liberal or labor."
Wow, that's his slogan?
That was his, like, he was accused of using that slogan.
Is this, like, my neighbor? God damn.
Man, that is a brutal slogan, my God.
That is the North Central Florida way to talk about people, about, like, fucking liberals, though.
Yeah.
You want these motherfuckers in power, you keep voting liberal. All right, bro.
In Smethwick...
You know, everything's a conspiracy, Ryan, you know? Yeah. Everything.
Joe Biden in the
fix
Oval
is in on the election,
levers.
The fix is in on Trump's cases, the fix is in on coronavirus...
I love how, like, before the case even goes to trial, they're like, this is fixed. And I'm like, yeah. Bro, what if he wins?
The fix
well,
is
then,
in.
Then he just happened to win. And I'm like,
fix
all
is
right.
in on Hunter Biden's laptop. The fix is in. You know, it's like,
just,
where
listen,
is
okay.
the...
Listen.
Can we just have a conversation where we're talking about what's actually happening and not your crazy fucking bananas idea of what might be happening?
They're just mad that Hunter Biden looks abjectly cooler than they will ever look. Just sitting there, like, fucking just doing drugs with prostitutes and just hookers and blow. Like, literally Bender from Futurama, hookers and blow.
He's got dick pic energy.
Yeah. And then all the Republicans are just really mad. They're like, damn it, we can't look that cool.
Oh, man.
There in Smethwick, Malcolm compared the treatment of ethnic minority residents with the treatment of Jews under Hitler, saying... I would not wait for the fascist element in Smethwick to erect gas ovens.
Okay, Malcolm, I think you're going a little bit too far there.
I mean, he was definitely a radical, so... Like,
yes,
the stuff he said was very potently phrased.
That is also, like, unrealistic and unreasonable.
After returning to the U.S., he addressed a wide variety of audiences... he would speak regularly at meetings held by his MMI and OAAU organizations and was one of the most sought-after speakers on college campuses.
The Marine Mechanics Institute hired him to speak?
Oh, shit.
And the... Wait, okay, so it's the it's the Marine Mechanics Institute and the Oklahoma Amateur Athletics Union. What
yes.
did they have Malcolm X speaking?
It was
for?
Well known that Malcolm was a Sooner Boomer, so or a Boomer Sooner.
He was an amateur wrestler.
When people would try to interrupt him, he would just start saying the fight song of the school, just start yelling, "Let's go Sooners!"
Oh, God. All right, so there he is. He's talking to the Marine Mechanics Institute. He's talking to these future boat mechanics.
It was said that he would, that he welcomed every opportunity to speak to college students. And he also addressed public meetings of the Socialist Workers Party, speaking at their militant labor forum. He was also interviewed on the subject of segregation and the Nation of Islam by Robert Penn Warren for Warren's book, published in 1965, Who Speaks for the Negro?
Who Speaks for the Negro? I like that it's an old white guy that wrote that book.
Throughout 1964 and into 65, though, he's still continuing to have conflicts with the Nation of Islam is repeatedly threatened. In February of 1965, he is... in February 1965, a leader of the Temple Number 7 ordered the bombing of Malcolm X's car. In March, Muhammad told Boston minister Louis X, who would later go on to be Louis Farrakhan, that hypocrites like Malcolm would have their heads cut off. And the April 10th edition of Muhammad Speaks, which is like the it's like the Watchtower, or was like the Watchtower for the Nation of Islam, mm-hmm. Featured a cartoon depicting Malcolm X's head bouncing from his body.
Mm. So the Nation of Islam is like Scientology, right?
I would say they're more like more or less financially intensive cults, but yeah, they're sort of like a weird cult that's more akin to like your Jehovah's Witnesses or your or Mormonism or something like that.
But I mean, like, because Jehovah's Witnesses and like your Mormonism type stuff, like that doesn't really strike me as the kind of people who are ordering hit jobs, you know what I'm saying, like ordering car bombs and stuff like that. That sounds like a Scientology nonsense. Like if you told me somebody from Scientology like try to bomb somebody's car, I probably wouldn't be surprised. Does that make sense?
Yeah, there were some like Mormon related murders, but they weren't from people like within the church. They were other like people outside the church, not counting the stuff like early on where the church is just like right. Mountain Meadows,
right?
But and I guess there's probably some intimidation stuff within like the Jehovah's Witnesses, because they have a lot of scandals like with sexual misconduct and stuff that they try to like cover up.
You don't say. A religion has sexual scandals that they try to cover up.
Yeah, plus they're batting zero for you know, predicting the end of the world, which is that's sad when your whole fucking religion's based on it.
Yes, everything your entire based on, you can't get it right.
Well, you know, if you count all the times, you know, when the day came and they're just standing there at the pulpit and they're just like, and
it's
now
so crazy too. If you break exactly, it's like trying to it's like trying to be right about when the traffic light's going to change. You know,
and
watch this, change. Ah, shit. Change.
I've heard that if you flash your brights at God, you know, the apocalypse will happen.
All right, we just gotta go to the next time now, Lord. It'll work there.
it's so fucking ridiculous. Just the whole eschatology stuff just really makes me laugh so much.
The cognitive dissonance of a pastor or a priest knowing the Bible backwards and forwards, being able to quote it on a whim, but then totally just ignoring passages like nobody knows the day that Jesus comes back and the world ends. God knows. But they just totally fucking ignore that. And it's like one of the most popular passages that somebody who is not religious at all can kind of sort of knows or may have heard in passing. But again, these people who study it are just kind of like, what?
Huh? Yeah, well, they use their own basically version of the Bible. It's like a modified version.
They just kind of like doing arts and crafts and just cutting out pages and cutting out words with X-Acto knives, the shit they don't want in there.
Yeah, I mean, kind of. I mean, that's kind of what they do, you know?
Jesus Christ.
I follow this guy. He's one of my favorite people online right now, actually. Dan McClellan, Dan McKellen, the religious scholar. He's a Mormon, but he's so good at just shutting down all that crazy, like, literalist Bible bullshit. It's so good. He talks about that.
So in February of 1964, as mentioned, he has that they've threatened to bomb his car. There are these credible threats against him. On June 8th of 1964, FBI surveillance recorded a telephone call in which Betty Shabazz, his wife, was told that her husband was quote-unquote as good as dead.
Wow.
4 days later, an FBI informant received a tip that Malcolm X is going to be bumped off. The same month, the Nation sued to reclaim Malcolm X's residence in East Elmhurst, Queens, and his family was ordered to vacate. But on February 14th, 1965, the night before a hearing of postponing the eviction, the house was destroyed by fire.
Oh, convenient.
On July 9th, Muhammad aide John Ali, suspected of being an undercover FBI agent, referred to Malcolm X by saying, anyone who opposes the Honorable Elijah Muhammad puts their life in jeopardy. In the December 4th issue of Muhammad Speaks, Louis X wrote that such a man as Malcolm is worthy of death.
God damn, bro.
the 1964 issue of Ebony dramatized Malcolm's defense defiance of these threats by publishing a photograph of him holding an M1 carbine while peering out of a window, which is the picture, like probably the most famous picture of Malcolm X.
Right, he's in like the suit with like the really skinny tie, and she's got like the AK, whatever the fuck he's holding.
It's like, an M1 carbine.
It's an M1 carbine. So my question is: was that photograph staged by Ebony magazine, or was that like a photographer just happened to be in there when some old like remember the Titan shit happened, like with Denzel and like threw a brick through his window, right? Was it staged photograph, or did something happen that would make him grab his gun to like stand there at the window?
I'm not sure, but I think it was just that the photographers were there, and, you know, that there's these credible threats against him.
All right. All right, Malcolm, listen, we got to get a good picture for you. All right. So pretend that somebody's outside screaming at you, and we're just going to start taking some candid photos.
Yeah, hold this gun up. Boys, he looks great. Look at him.
Look at this terrible trigger discipline on him, but fuck it, take the picture.
He looks good. He looks good. He looks dangerous. Take a picture.
He's skinny.
Let's get some pictures, Lou.
On the big stupid flash bulbs,
fucking flash so bright the gun goes off.
Imagine people were outside threatening him. They hit him with the flash bulb. Now he can't see shit. Yeah. He just starts wildly.
My favorite is that scene in Airplane where the press is like, "All right, boys, let's get some pictures," and they just take everything off the wall. Like all the hot pictures hung up on the wall. So good every time.
On February 19th, 1965, Malcolm told interviewer Gordon Parks that the Nation of Islam was actively trying to kill him.
What evidence did he have? I mean, it's not like there were actual death threats or anything that you just kept reading off over and over
it's
again.
It's not that they printed pictures in a fucking newsletter.
He's got no evidence.
Down the sidewalk.
Your Honor, it's ridiculous. When we said we were going to kill him, what we meant was spiritually.
Figuratively. With kindness. We would kill him with kindness.
Yeah. We're going to kill him softly with our words.
Now it's in my head all day long.
On February 21st, he was preparing to address the OAU in Manhattan's Audubon Ballroom when someone in the 400-person audience yelled, "N-word, get your hand out of my pocket." As Malcolm and his guards tried to quell the disturbance, a man rushed forward and shot him once in the chest with a sawed-off shotgun, and two other men charged the stage firing semi-automatic handguns.
What were these fucking bodyguards doing? Just looking at shit at that point?
Well, I guess they were busy handling the distraction, and then...
That's not your job. Your job is to guard the person that is paying you, not handling people in an... Okay, anyway.
Malcolm was pronounced dead at 3:30 p.m., shortly after arriving at Columbia Presbyterian Hospital. The autopsy identified 21 gunshot wounds to the chest, left shoulder, arms, and legs.
21? What the fuck was his bodyguards? 21 shots?
Well, you know, Jesus, I mean, he's got the armor of God. Christ. So, I mean, you gotta get a couple bullets in there.
Holy shit. Are they counting?
What if he stands up?
Ten of those are from the shotgun.
Okay, I was going to say, he got hit with a shotgun, so some of that might be buckshot, but oh my God.
What if he gets up? 11... What if he gets up, dude, and says something mean, you know? Says something mean about our organization. I mean, we got to get a lot of shots in.
He gets shot 21 times, once with a sawed-off shotgun, at least once. I might start believing in God and having to think, who is this guy, right quick?
One gunman, Nation of Islam member Talmadge Hayer, was beaten by the crowd before police arrived. Witness identified the other gunman as Nation members Norman 3X Butler and Thomas 15X Johnson.
Who wear an XL and a 2X shirt, respectively.
I'm going to be Norman 13X. Well, I'm going to be Thomas 15X.
Would go on to found the Big Johnson Corporation.
I'm willing to bet that the guys that shot Malcolm X probably didn't get manhandled too bad by the police and everybody else that like took him to jail. They're probably like, you know what? This guy kind of did us a little bit of a favor.
Fine
like,
work, William 13X.
All three were convicted of murder in March of 1966 and sentenced to life in prison. Mm-hmm. At trial, Hayer confessed but refused to identify the other assailants except to assert that they were not Butler and Johnson. In 1977 and 78, he signed affidavits asserting Butler's and Johnson's innocence, naming four other nation members of Newark's Mosque No. 25 as participants in the murder or its planning. These affidavits did not result in the case being reopened. Butler today is known as Muhammad Abdul Aziz and was paroled in 1985 and became the head of the nation's Harlem Mosque in 1998. He maintains his innocence. In prison, Johnson, who changed his name to Khalil Islam, rejected the nation's teachings and converted to Sunni Islam. Released in 1987, he maintained innocence until his death in August of 2009. Heyer also rejected the nation's teachings while in prison, converted to Sunni Islam, and is known today as Mujahid Halim. He was paroled in 2010.
Mujahideen is what he's going by right now? What?
Mujahid Halim.
Oh, okay.
He was paroled?
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, he's probably really old.
These guys all killed. These guys killed Malcolm X. Okay, yeah. Again, they're not going to be in bar. They're not going to die in prison. Yeah. They're going to definitely get out.
Because if he was paroled in 2010, he was in prison for 36 years or 34 years.
Yep.
I'm sure he was also held for the time from the trial too. So, from 36 years. Muhammad Abdul Aziz and Khalil Islam were exonerated from their murder convictions following a review that found the FBI and New York Police Department withheld key evidence during the trial. On July 14, 2022, Aziz filed suit in the U.S. District Court in Brooklyn against the city of New York, seeking $40 million in damages related to his wrongful imprisonment. Les Payne and Tamara Payne, in their Pulitzer Prize-winning biography, The Dead Are Arising, The Life of Malcolm X, claimed that the assassins were members of the Nation of Islam's Newark, New Jersey mosque. William 25X, who fired the shotgun, Leon Davis and Thomas Heyer were the assassins.
Jesus Christ. I feel like this is like mob families. Those Nation of Islam from Newark, the five families. We got the Nation of Islam from Newark, Nation of Islam from Harlem.
There's the boys up in Albany there.
We got the boys from Boston coming in there, the heavy hitters from Boston coming in there. You know, and then also the upstate Nation of Islam, but we don't fuck with them because they're a bunch of
sisters. The Utica Nation.
The Branson, Syracuse. Missouri Temple.
Oh, man.
These soft-ass motherfuckers from Niagara Falls, you heard?
The viewing of Malcolm X's body was held from February 23rd to 26th at Unity Funeral Home in Harlem. It was attended by some 14,000 to 30,000 mourners. For the funeral on February 27th, loudspeakers were set up for the overflow crowd outside Harlem's 1,000-seat faith temple of the Church of God in Christ, and a local television station carried the service live.
And the eulogy was read off by one Busta Rhymes with music by DMX.
Who was no two at the time.
Understand.
They call it murder. Among the civil rights leaders attending were John Lewis, Bayard Rustin, James Foreman, James Farmer, Jesse Gray, and Andrew Young. Actor and activist Ozzie Davis delivered the eulogy, describing Malcolm X as our shining black prince who didn't hesitate to die because he loved us so.
I don't know if he was not hesitating to die so much as just was shocked and just blindsided by it.
In his eulogy, he said, "There are those who will consider it their duty as friends of the Negro people to tell us to revile him, to flee even from the presence of his memory, to save ourselves by writing him out of the history of our turbulent times. Many will ask what Harlem finds to honor in this stormy, controversial, and bold young captain, and we will smile. Many will say, turn away from this man, for he is not a man, but a demon, a monster, a subverter, and an enemy of the black man. And we will smile. They will say that he is of hate, a fanatic, a racist, who can only bring evil to the cause for which you struggle. And we will answer and say to them, did you ever talk to Brother Malcolm? Did you ever touch him or have him smile at you? Did you ever really listen to him? Did he ever do a mean thing? Was he ever himself associated with violence or any public disturbance? For if you did, you would know him. And if you knew him, you would know why we must honor him, and in honoring him, we honor the best in ourselves. He was then buried at Ferncliff Cemetery in Hartsdale, New York. Friends would take up the shovels and complete the burial themselves. Actor and activist Ruby Dee and Juanita Poitier, the wife of Sidney Poitier, established the Committee of Concerned Mothers to raise money for a home for his family and for his children's education. Reactions to Malcolm X's assassination were varied. In a telegram to Betty Shabazz, Martin Luther King Jr. expressed his sadness at the shocking and tragic assassination of your husband. He said, "While we did not always see eye to eye on methods to solve the race problem, I always had a deep affection for Malcolm and felt that he had a great ability to put his finger on the existence and root of the problems. He was an eloquent spokesman for his point of view, and no one can honestly doubt that Malcolm had a great concern for the problems that we face as a race."
I think the funniest thing is if he could have sent that to Betty as a singing telegram instead of just a regular telegram.
Anytime anyone says a singing telegram, I think of Clue.
Yeah. That's
all I think about. Your singing telegram. Pop.
Can you imagine? Somebody expects a telegram and ends up being a singing telegram from Martin Luther King Jr. expressing his condolences at the fact your husband was just murdered.
I'm sad he's dead. And then just leaves.
And then, no, then he waits for the tip.
Yeah, he just pats out. Jazz hand on the left hand, hat hand on the right.
Elijah Muhammad told the annual Savior's Day convention on February 26th that Malcolm X got just what he preached, but denied any involvement with the murder. He said, "We didn't want to kill Malcolm and didn't try to kill him." Adding, we know such ignorant, foolish teachings would bring him to his own end. Writer James Baldwin, who had been a friend of Malcolm's, was in London when he heard the news of the assassination. He responded with indignation towards the reporters interviewing him, shouting, "You did it. It is because of you, the men that created this white supremacy, that this man is dead. You are not guilty, but you did it. Your mills, your cities, your rape of a continent started all this."
Yeah, Baldwin was a very intelligent person.
The New York Post wrote that even his sharpest critics recognized his brilliance, often wild, unpredictable, and eccentric, but nevertheless possessing promise that must now remain unrealized. The New York Times wrote that Malcolm X was an extraordinary and twisted man who turned many gifts to evil purpose, and that his life was strangely and pitifully wasted. They called him an unashamed demagogue whose creed was violence.
Damn.
So the New York Post, you know, not much has changed in, you know, 60 years.
Yeah, no, still exactly the same. Although I hate to be this person, but violence is how you get things done. Like, I hate to be that person, right? Like, peace and being peaceful and coming to agreements and coming to the table, the pen's mightier than the sword, blah, 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 blah. That is true to a point, but up until that, after that point, violence, and that's how you get shit done. Like, he walks off the but carry a big stick, was what Roosevelt said, right? The main part of that is still carry a big stick, right? Because, like, things like peaceful resistance only work because there's people behind you that are willing to do violence if that peaceful resistance doesn't work.
Sometimes. It's subjective. There's no one answer to what you're talking about.
I mean, correct. I'm just saying I think that
peaceful resistance works if everyone agrees that we're going to be peaceful resistance and we're going to not stop when we get attacked or anything like that. But the problem is the vast majority of society now doesn't really give a shit, right? They're not going to go out and protest or any of that kind of stuff. So the only people that go out...
But you got to think why people give pause, like the cops.
Violence only works if you have a surfeit of violence. Like, you have to have... You're going to be the violence giant in order to win the battle, you know?
But, I mean, like, the reason that the police are not going to just, like, outright start kicking teeth in for violent protesters is because they know. They know if they start violence against nonviolent protesters, there are people behind the nonviolent protesters who are going to say, okay, now it's hot.
Like, maybe.
Now we're gonna get loose now.
Maybe.
That's just that is one of those things that I learned when I was a kid, and I forget who I learned it from, but, like... The kind of idea of peaceful protest only works because there are people behind you willing to do just untold amounts of violence. Like, that's why it works.
Outside the U.S., particularly in Africa, the press was sympathetic. The Daily Times of Nigeria wrote that Malcolm X would have a place in the palace of our martyrs. The Ghanaian Times likened him to John Brown, Medgar Evers, and Patrice Lumumba, and counted him among a host of Africans and Americans who were martyred in freedom's cause. In China, the People's Daily described Malcolm X as a martyr killed by ruling circles and racists, and in the United States. His assassination, the paper wrote, demonstrated, in dealing with imperialist oppressors, violence must be met with violence.
I mean, at the time, you could probably say that about anybody, right? You got killed in the United States? Fucking racists.
The Guangming Daily, also published in Beijing, stated that Malcolm was murdered because he fought for freedom and equal rights.
Also correct in the 60s in America. Yes.
Yeah.
In Cuba, El Mundo described the assassination as another racist crime to eradicate by violence the struggle against discrimination.
El Mundo, also which correct. Means... The Mundo.
El Mundo was the name of our Spanish textbook in 10th grade.
Yeah. Oh, man.
In a weekly column he wrote for the New York Amsterdam News, King reflected on Malcolm X and his assassination. Malcolm X came to the fore as a public figure partially as a result of a TV documentary titled The Hate That Hate Produced. That title points to the nature of Malcolm's life and death. Malcolm X was clearly a product of hate and violence invested in the Negro's blighted existence in this nation. In his youth, there was no hope, no preaching, teaching movements of nonviolence. It is a testimony to Malcolm's personal depth and integrity that he could not become an underworld czar, but turned again and again to religion for meaning and destiny. Malcolm was still turning and growing at the time of his brutal and meaningless assassination. Like the murder of Lumumba, the murder of Malcolm X deprives the world of a potentially great leader. I could not agree with either of these men, but I could see in them the capacity for leadership which I could respect, and which was just beginning to mature in judgment and statesmanship. Within days, the question of who bore responsibility for the assassination was being publicly debated. On February 23rd, James Farmer, leader of the Congress for Racial Equality, announced at a news conference that local drug dealers and not the Nation of Islam were to blame.
Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up, James. God damn.
Fuck you, others, James.
Others accused the NYPD, the FBI, and the CIA, citing the lack of police protection, the ease with which the assassins entered the Autobahn ballroom, and the failure of the police to preserve a crime scene. Earl Grant, one of Malcolm X's associates, was present at the assassination. He later wrote, "About 5 minutes later, a most incredible scene took place. Into the hall sauntered about a dozen policemen. They were strolling out at about the pace one would expect of them if they were patrolling a quiet park. They did not seem at all to be excited or concerned about the circumstances. I could hardly believe my eyes. Here were New York City policemen entering a room from which at least a dozen shots had been heard, and yet none of them had his gun out. As a matter of absolute fact, some of them even had their hands in their pockets."
Boy, how things have changed. Imagine today, 60 years later, if gunshots were fired at, let's just say, like an African-American kind of like rally. Bro, the cops would just come in there shooting.
They wouldn't give a fuck. What's like that guy that immolated himself and the cops like has his gun on him, and it's like he's on fire, you dumbass.
Jeez. There's like, but he's got a gun.
In the 1970s, the public learned about the COINTELPRO program and other secret FBI programs established to infiltrate and disrupt civil rights organizations during the 50s and 60s. Louis Lomax wrote that John Ali, the aforementioned National Secretary of the Nation of Islam, was a former FBI agent. Malcolm X had confided to a reporter that Ali exacerbated tensions between him and Elijah Muhammad, and that he considered Ali his archenemy within the Nation of Islam leadership. Ali had a meeting with Talmadge Hayer, one of the men convicted of killing Malcolm X the night before the assassination. The Shabazz family are also among those who have accused Louis Farrakhan of involvement in Malcolm X's assassination.
Oh, you don't say, the guy that wanted to fucking car bomb him?
In 1993 speech, Farrakhan seemed to acknowledge the possibility that the Nation of Islam was responsible, stating, "Was Malcolm your traitor or ours? And if we dealt with him like a nation deals with a traitor, what the hell business is it of yours? A nation has to be able to deal with traitors and cutthroats and turncoats." In a 60 Minutes interview that aired during May 2000, Farrakhan stated that some things he said may have led to the assassination of Malcolm X. He said, "I may have been complicit in the words that I spoke," he said, adding, "I acknowledge that and regret that any word that I have said caused the loss of life of a human being."
Yeah, when you look at them dudes and you're like, hey, this is where he's going to be. You should run up in there and shoot him. I feel like your words might make you guilty.
A few days later, Farrakhan denied that he ordered the assassination of Malcolm X, although he again acknowledged that he created the atmosphere that ultimately led to Malcolm X's assassination.
God, what a slimy piece of shit.
No consensus has been reached on who was responsible for the assassination. In August of 2014, an online petition was started using the White House online petition mechanism to call on the government to release, without alteration, any files they still had relating to the murder of Malcolm X. In January of 2019, members of the families of Malcolm X, John F. Kennedy, Martin Luther King Jr., and Robert F. Kennedy were among dozens of Americans who signed a public statement calling for a Truth and Reconciliation Commission to persuade Congress or the Justice Department to review the assassinations of all four leaders during the 1960s.
Is the Truth and Reconciliation Commission a real thing?
It was a thing in South Africa.
So it's not a thing here in the United States?
No, it's a thing that happened in South Africa over the end of apartheid, and essentially said that people could admit to their crimes but would not be criminally prosecuted, just to like give like a sense of closure and peace to people.
Yeah, I feel like also you should do that. I mean, it's too late now because they would all be in their hundreds, but they should have done that like way back in the day, to be like, hey, listen, any of y'all who are Nazis, we're gonna give you the opportunity to come clean, and we'll just forgive whatever you did. And then as soon as they did, be like, get them.
Like one of the problems that comes with that, and why they have to do that, is because like a lot of these governments, like South Africa and like East Germany, for instance, like when the people did these things that we would generally consider crimes, like they were not crimes. Like one that comes up with like East Germany, other than like the spying and stuff, is that the like their illicit sports doping program, where they essentially made like female athletes trans in some cases by giving them so many like steroids. And it's just one of those things where like, yeah, like these people should be brought to justice, but what they were doing was not illegal under the government they lived under. So you can't really prosecute them for the crimes, because it's not like there was a war, you know?
You should be able to prosecute that kind of thing for moral, like being just morally reprehensible, because even though it is not by the letter of the law a crime, I can name 10 things off the top of my fucking head right now that are not by the letter of the law a crime, but it's morally reprehensible to the point that you need to be committed for that. Like, you should be locked up. I don't give a shit if it's a crime or not. Morally, you know better. Like, you know better. You can't judge people for the actions at the time that they were done, if it was like blah, 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 blah. Like, you talk about like racism specifically, like, correct. Like, if you're raised in that environment, but the problem is when when tasked with, hey, you can do the right thing right now, morally, the abject correct thing, and you still don't do it, is a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. In February 21st, 2021, a press conference attended by three of Malcolm X's daughters and members of the deceased NYPD undercover officer Raymond Wood's family released his authorized posthumous letter that stated in part, "I was told to encourage leaders and members of the civil rights groups to commit felonious acts." The Guardian reports the arrest kept the two men from managing door security at the Audubon Ballroom in Washington Heights on that day of the shooting, according to the letter. And on February 26, 2021, the daughter of Raymond Wood, Kelly Wood, say that the letter presented at the February 21st press conference was a fake. She also stated that the letter was created by her cousin, Reggie Wood, for attention and book sales.
God, I hate people. Jesus Christ.
In early 2023, members of Malcolm X's family said they would file a $100 million wrongful death lawsuit against the CIA, the FBI, the NYPD, and others for allegedly concealing evidence related to the assassination and for alleged involvement in it. The attorney representing them is Benjamin Crump.
Who's really? Like Ben Crump?
Benjamin Crump?
Really? Yeah.
Didn't he do Trayvon Martin?
He's done all the high-profile killings that have happened in the recent years.
And if he's done a lot of those high-profile ones, and he has a really good track record, then...
I think he's just a high-power attorney.
Yeah.
Did you see that they got the paramedics in George Floyd's murder? The paramedics are now being sentenced to prison as well.
Why?
Because they did nothing to stop it. I guess either they did nothing to stop it or they didn't attempt any sort of resuscitation when they got on scene. Something strange, but yeah, 5 years in prison. Enjoy. Have a nice day.
Whoa.
Get fucked.
No, straight up, get fucked. That's fucking crazy.
I mean, to be honest, if you're negligent in your duties enough that you're being thrown into jail because you didn't do anything, like, come on, man.
Yeah.
So that, boys, is the life and death of one Malcolm X.
Wait, he died?
What about his raunchy sex parties? What are we going to talk about those?
Did he have those?
No.
You never know. You know.
Oh, God, that'd be hilarious. Malcolm X, it was Louis Farrakhan, it was MLK.
Oh my god. Well, there are racists who like do that. They like insist that they're all just moral degenerates and stuff like that. I mean, and they'll like neglect anything MLK did and just be like, you know, he cheated on his wife, right? Like, yeah, okay. Okay, buddy.
That's what you got to go on. Okay.
Completely irrelevant argument. Very cogent of you.
Just totally ignoring everything. I can't believe he's your moral authority. He done slipped around on Coretta. Like, bro, shut the fuck up.
Oh, my God. All right. With that, good evening.
Good luck.
Bye.
Bye.